Anima messaged me yesterday being
I
like,
I was crying.
Oh my god, I'm crying. I'm like, about Maria Cacao? What's going on?
Oh my.
There's a baterol which is like,
think of it like a mace, like a battle mace.
Yeah,
but
like
small.
A battle mace.
A golden galleon ship.
Yeah.
And a beautiful woman on it.
Huh. Oh, wow.
All over.
She's an international business.
She's an
lady.
International.
Kung tosa mo na interest.
I mean, you didn't return my golden pitcher, so I will take your soul instead.
Honestly, okay. Maria Cacao the loan shark.
I know, right?
It's like, want. Guys, this is not a sustainable business model.
It's not a sustainable business model. If we cannot agree to be civilized. But who's her husband? Oh, no, she doesn't have a husband. No, impossible! Because I would believe every other aspect of this legend.
There's no way a woman could do all.
It's my Mrs. Doubtfire accent. Hello!
Hello!
Hello! Hello! Hi, welcome to the Gods Must Be Crazy podcast.
I'm Ice.
I'm Anima.
The Gods Must Be Crazy is a podcast on Philippine mythology and folklore. And today we're going to cover another topic.
Another topic as part of our Walang Kamatayan spooky series. Walang Kamatayan meaning never ending.
Although it is ending soon.
It is ending. This is the last one, actually.
The last episode.
This is the last episode of our Walang Kamatayan series. I think I've really enjoyed, you know, we typically don't go heavy on the themes.
Yeah.
But I think this is such a
because
big,
we just follow our heart.
Yes, follow our hearts and our interests and our dopamine. Yeah. But I think here, these series on deaths, death gods and goddesses, death rituals and death practices. It's just so big. It's such a big part of our...
Because death is a perennial part of life.
Exactly. And especially now in the, you know, Undas or Halloween or, you know, death occasions. It's a good time to revisit.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't end. This is the last episode for this series, but that doesn't mean we won't have more topics next year.
For sure.
For sure we'll have it. So this one is a little bit off the... It's a tangent of a death ritual. It is someone who is it's about a lady.
We did feature a lot of ladies this season.
Yes, we did. I mean, we do feature a lot of ladies in general in this podcast anyways.
That is true.
Right? So this lady is a psychopomp adjacent.
What does this mean?
Psychopomp, pomp, pomp, pomp. So her name is Maria Cacao.
Ooh.
And that's the reason why I brought you chocolate popcorn.
Oh, thanks. I did not realize that.
There was like, I was thinking of being thematic. Yeah. And I said, how chocolatey can we go? So Maria Cacao.
Yeah.
Is very chocolatey. So I'll tell you about Maria Cacao, the goddess. I'll tell you about Maria Cacao, the legend. And I'll tell you about how Maria Cacao is influencing our lives even to this day.
Ooh.
Yes.
And I love the three-part structure.
I know. Always three things. That's what they taught us in our old company. Always three ideas. And then I'll also tell you a little bit about geography and the chocolate industry in the Philippines. Because, you know,
are we going to talk about honey and ricoa?
No, we won't. You know what?
And curly tops.
You know what? We didn't get into that. But we do have a honey adjacent.
What?
Honey adjacent story. I mean, I'll get it off. So in the Philippines, so chocolate.
Uh-huh.
Chocolate is grown a lot in the Philippines, right? But growing up, us.
Cacao,
yes. But growing up, we had our own kinds of chocolates, which aren't like Western chocolate.
Is it indigenous to the Philippines or did we get it from Mexico?
We got it from Mexico. We got it from South America.
There's even potatoes, I think.
Yeah, potatoes too. So we had our own growing up chocolates like Ricoa and Surge and Goya and things like that.
Yeah.
But what has stayed, I think, is the chocnut and honey.
Yeah.
Type of candy.
Well, the others have stayed. Too.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
They're just not as popular.
They're not as popular, yeah. And if you watch Tres, eh?
Yeah.
The Nuno Sapunso likes chocolate.
Yeah.
And the other variant is honey. I think honey is sweeter. It's more milkier and smoother. Yeah,
and it's moister.
It's so moister. It doesn't crumble apart.
So, sorry, if you're not familiar, this is like a... It's supposed to be a chocolate and peanut butter kind of bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's honestly feels like it's more peanut butter than chocolate or anything. And
so good.
The thing is that chocolate, I think, tastes better, but it's drier, so it's a bit chalkier.
Yeah.
And then honey is moister.
Yeah. Chocolate has sort of like a polveron adjacent texture. And honey is like milkier and moister. Did you know that the endorser and the
commercial,
is our friend Apple.
Yeah.
Apple Cordova is the model for honey. And we did try to hunt down who the other boys are in the commercial that she was in. We never found them.
They only had one ad campaign ever.
One ad campaign. One print ad ever. And our friend Apple Cordova was on it. So, greets to Apple Cordova. But anyways, on the tangent of chocolate and Maria Cacao.
I thought that was your intro to the topic.
Like, that was not my... No. It wasn't. It was just a straight out tangent. Okay. Let's dive into the Maria Cacao legend. So I thought this is one of those things, again, where I thought there was not a lot of context for it. But again, once again, I've gone in through the rabbit hole of all of the cacao adjacent topics. So Maria Cacao is a diwata.
Yes.
Or a mountain goddess associated with Mount Lantoy in Argao, Cebu.
So similar to like Maria Makiling.
So yes, so they're she's considered to be part of like the Maria Makiling, Maria Sinokuan, all the Marias, the Diwatas.
Who we covered separately.
We did.
One in episode 2, we did the Maria Makiling feature, and one in, gosh, I don't know the episode.
Was it the gods must be fighting on?
Arayat. Sinukuan.
Yes. Yeah. So we covered that. So see, she's the third one.
Yeah. We finally covered the
Tres Marias. So she is the goddess associated with Mount Lantoy in Argao, Cebu. And I have pictures later to show you. Maria Cacao is a legend, is a prominent example of the mountain goddess motif.
Yes.
In Philippine mythologies, like Maria Makiling of Los Baños and Maria Sinukuan of Mount Arayat.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously Maria is a Spanish name.
Yeah, it's a Mary. Right?
So the original name of Maria Cacao is can be spelled like cocoa, C-A-C-A-O, or cacao, K-I-K-A-W. Cacao. It's K-A-K-A-W.
Cacao. Cacao.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The origin is not documented.
And it's probably not even cacao because
cacao is also a Spanish word.
Cacao is introduced by the Spanish, right?
Yeah.
So
it's not recorded before Spanish times.
And it was recorded, but it was,
Yeah. It doesn't survive. Yeah. It changed her name in a bid to convert natives to Catholicism. So she was probably a goddess who existed before in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And then they named her. It's this whole thing of she is. She's a Maria. She's a Mary. She's also a Catholic goddess, right? Mm-hmm. So Maria Cacao. And so it's widely assumed that her name is not indigenous, as cacao is an imported item that came from Latin America when the Spanish arrived. Additionally, the term Maria is added by the Spanish to turn her Catholic in a bid to widen the Spanish rule in Cebu. Cebu, which was one of the first regions, to be adopted into Catholicism.
Isn't that where Magellan's Cross is?
Yes, Magellan's Cross is in Mactan, Cebu. Right? Is that right? Yes,
Mactan, Cebu. That is, legend says.
Legend says, yes.
It grows.
Yes. It's, who knows? They also said that Lapu-Lapu killed Magellan, but Lapu-Lapu is supposedly like 60, 70 years old.
His army killed Magellan.
Of course, his army killed Magellan. But of course, there's all these buff depictions of Lapu-Lapu, which I currently like really love.
You know, boss is taking credit for their subordinates for charm. No, but they always do that naman, diba? The king takes credit for the... Yeah.
Of course.
Okay,
and he has press. Like with Makiling and Sinukuan, who we talked about previously, it is assumed that her mythology was present before the Spanish came, with a little bit of differences. It's also possible that the legend of Maria Cacao was influenced by Magwayan, who we talked about in our last episode.
No way!
Yes! So there's a lot of similarities that
influenced by meaning...
It's probably like...
She's kind of Magwayan.
She may have been like Magwayan. Yeah. Magwayan, of course, is the Hiligaynon, Iloilo, goddess of the sea and death. Because there are sea themes, there are boat themes, and there are psychopomp themes also. So there, she might have been the same goddess.
Yeah.
Or a slightly similar
just
goddess.
Renamed,
yeah. She might be the inland version of the sea goddess, right? Because Maria Cacao is more on the rivers, and Maguayan was more on the oceans or the seas, right? They bear like a lot of the similar elements as well. She also, like Maguayan, blesses the people with bounty.
Okay.
Maguayan is, of course, sea things, and Maria Cacao, chocolate things.
Love it.
Among other things, she also blesses them with like home appliances.
What?
Yeah. Okay.
I love this.
Her appearance, what does she look like, right? So, unlike her sisters in Luzon, who are Makiling and Sinukuan, sisters, quote-unquote, who are more morena, or like darker skin, Maria Cacao is described to have pale skin and an aquiline nose.
So, is she Spanish?
She could be.
She's mestiza.
She's mestiza, yes. So, that's a very different Filipino native look. So this could be telling about her class or race, or she could be like a Spanish mestiza. Or remember, the Encantos are also depicted as having like Western features, right? Then before Spanish times, they believed that there were already Encantos in Mount Lantoy to begin with. There's like a cave there that looks very magical.
Ooh.
The mountain itself is this. It's a mountain. It's like what you expect a mountain to look like. And it's not like super high, but this one, in the opening is very gaping.
It looks majestic. Yeah.
It does look majestic. And it goes like really, really deep, apparently.
But I guess all of the records that talk about her are Spanish records. Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yes. So we talked about what she looked like, what her possible etymology is. So basically, the legend is Maria Cacao lives up in the Mount Aragao, right? The basic form of the legend is that whenever rains flood the river that comes from Mount Lantoy, Mount Lantoy, or a bridge is broken, it means that Maria Cacao and her husband, Manggao, have either traveled down the river in their golden ship because they export their crops of chocolate.
Oh, wow.
Which, and the Mount Lantoy is full of like chocolate plants. So that she harvested it and she's going up and down the river and she crosses like 7 rivers up and down. And so sometimes when the water is malaki yung water, mataas yung water, and the bridge is broken, it means that the mast of her ship, and it's a golden ship,
has hit the
bridge and broken it.
Oh.
Because she takes advantage of the high flood waters to go back and forth to export her goods.
Okay.
So she's known to have to just like kalakal and like to trade outside, up the river and back. She is supposed to live inside the cave of the mountain, and the cacao plants outside it are supposed to be her own plantation.
I have a question.
Yes.
So cacao plants are not indigenous to the Philippines.
They were brought over through the galleon trade.
But they were planted on the mountain?
Yeah, they were planted apparently all around.
Okay.
The bulk of which, in this reason to the cacao industry in the Philippines, the bulk of which are actually in Davao. But they were apparently planted all around Cebu also in the Visayas.
And this mountain happened to be, I don't know, ideal climate for cacao. And so there were lots of chocolate.
For both cacao, but also for trading. Because not only is it a rich land.
Where is it in Cebu?
It is in South Cebu.
Okay.
Nearer to Davao, actually.
Okay.
So, I'll show you on a map because I also looked it up.
So this is a business lady.
This is a business lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a business lady. She does business. Mount Lantoy is a small mountain.
Okay.
And it's declared a watershed forest reserve located 10 kilometers inland from Aragao, southern Cebu.
Okay.
It's believed that she lives in the mountain cave, of course, with her abundant plantation, and she harvests the cacao and exports them in a magnificent golden galleon that traverses down an unspecified river. In some stories...
In the cave or outside?
The cave is where she lives.
Okay.
And then I guess the boat is.
And who does she sell it to? The people.
The foreigners. She sells it to foreign people.
Okay.
And then she trades with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In some stories, she has a husband. There's a guy.
Yes.
Or a brother.
This is normal. This is a very common trope in.
Yeah, in mythology. Who's like her assistant in the business.
Yes, I love this.
He is the, like, it doesn't even matter if he's a husband or a brother, because all he does is helps her in the business.
Yeah.
This is fine.
He's a chief of staff.
Yes, she's a chief of staff. If not, a leap in. Sources claim that she supplies the chocolate to Argao locals to make into tablea, which are these circular coin-like chocolate things that you use to make hot chocolate good. For drinking.
Yeah.
Ooh. And also sikwate, which is the hot chocolate with butter and butterol.
Yeah.
And then, or champurrado, which is sweet chocolate rice porridge.
So the tablea is kind of like the condensed, concentrated version of chocolate for storage and, you know, transportation. So basically, they dry it up and compact it into like either these long little logs or like, as Anima said, into like little coins, so like slices of the log. And the traditional way of making chocolate or chocolate is de baterol,
which is like a wooden whisk.
Yeah, so there's like a wooden, if you look it up, you'll see. So usually the traditional way, and we did this, we had this a lot in Pampanga.
I love it so much.
There's it's like a metal thing. Jug. And you put the metal jug. It literally looks like a pitcher jug.
Yeah.
Not a pan. And you put it on the stove and you mix butter or cream or milk. And you put the tablea in. And
the whole thing. The whole coin.
That you mix it is not with like a wooden spoon or whatever. There's a baterol, which is like...
Think of it like a mace. Like a battle mace.
Yeah,
but
like
small.
A battle mace. Or the other way to think about it is it's like you broke off a piece of corn.
Yeah.
And you stuck a stick in it.
Yes.
And
so it's got those
that's
grooves.
The shape of the
wood. If you think of the surface of a meat tenderizer, but it's all the way around, like a cylinder meat tenderizer.
So basically something that allows you to whisk the chocolate smoothly. You put the handle between your hands and you, Anima's making the sound effect, but you rub your hands together
kind of.
And that mixes the chocolate and... It changes, makes it a very smooth, buttery consistency.
Mm-hmm. Because it's got butter in it.
Yeah.
Chocolate. It's like bulletproof hot chocolate. It's so good. Do you use condensada?
I just use milk.
We used evaporada.
Evaporada is more...
Evaporated milk.
Watery.
Yes, it's watery. It doesn't have as much fats in
it.
So good. So that's hot chocolate. Champurrado is gelatinous rice porridge with chocolate.
Which we sometimes eat with tuyo.
With salted dried fish.
That's so good.
Or puset. Squid. Salted dried squid. Or danggit, which is like a butterfly little fish.
Yeah.
Dried out in the sun. But so like yummy. Something very salty.
Yeah.
With a very sweet chocolatey thing.
And or you have bacon.
And you have it for breakfast or merienda, which is your afternoon snack.
Or whenever.
So
they sell it at MAPS.
At Max, yes, in Singapore.
Okay.
So.
Long chocolate.
So this chocolate. So they use the tablea for sikwate or champurrado. And others say she sells them to farther places in Asia and Europe.
Oh, wow.
All over.
She's an international business lady.
She's an international Maria Cacao business lady. So whenever the gilded ship sails down the river to Plyet Street, it's any once wooden bridge gets destroyed. So they keep on, so apparently it's just a whole cycle of building and rebuilding bridges. And eventually they thought that it happened so often that people were not convinced that it was the flash floods that were causing. They said like, surely.
Yeah.
There is something supernatural that's destroying these bridges.
And not just poor engineering on our parts.
Yes, yes. And so so the townspeople shunned the couple and blamed them for the resulting deaths.
Oh.
Yeah. An alternative legend published by a local...
I've not heard of like a mythology where the people
didn't like her.
Hated on the god or whatever.
They did, they did. And there's also even a portion of the mythology later on where she used to be a benefactor.
Uh-huh.
And then she stopped.
But can I just say something at this point? The whole legend of Maria Cacao feels very much like a Spanish or Spanish construct. Influence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thing.
So there's also...
Like, I don't... It just... So first of all, the fact that it's about cacao.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I struggle to see any trace of, like, pre-colonial beliefs.
Yeah.
At the root of it.
Yeah.
Unless you're gonna get there eventually. It feels very of...
No, it's very like post-Spanish. After the Spanish
game, yeah. They created this story, which is probably why they also hated on her.
Yeah, probably. It's very different from like a diwata or like a goddess who's doing things for the benefit of the mountain, for the benefit of the people. It's very self-serving.
She's like,
I'm a tradesperson.
I'm not gonna give you the bounty.
I don't even care that I'm knocking down your bridges. Mirror. There is an alternative legend that was published by a local university that states that Maria Cacao and her ship were never seen again since the coming of the Americans that rebuilt the bridges with concrete. Mm. But there is still another legend.
Because her galleon can't pass
by. Can't pass by. But there is even another legend before that that says when the American engineers came, before they build a concrete bridge, they need to build a wooden bridge.
Yeah.
And then you have to build, like, I guess on top of it or, like, reinforce it. But before you build a concrete bridge, you do build a weaker material.
Uh-huh.
And the bridge is still kept on getting destroyed. So the American architect supposedly went to Maria Cacao's cave and made offerings and supplications.
Oh.
Please stop destroying our bridges because... we need to make a concrete bridge.
Yeah. But this reminds me of in Manila, when we do TV shoots, commercial shoots, or whatever.
Yeah.
It's so normal. It's so normal, guys.
Yes, okay. Yes. It's a part of the checklist.
The production company, the event company, or whatever, they will say, okay, so this is our production schedule, da da da. And at the end of it,
before the start of the event.
No. At the end of the meeting.
Okay.
At the end of the meeting, they're like, yeah, and then we're gonna offer eggs, guys.
To Santa Clara.
So we offer eggs to Santa Clara to make sure that the weather is okay, to make sure that no misfortune befalls events until today.
It's a cost.
Yeah.
It's not like, expensive.
Yeah. So someone, a PA from the production agency or the events agency, will go and offer eggs.
To the Church of Santa Clara.
And we say, mag-aalay muna tayo ng itlog bago tayo mag-shoot.
Yes.
To make sure that the shoot goes smoothly or the event goes smoothly.
Yes.
It's really, I can't believe we never talked about it before.
It's just a given.
It's such a normal thing in the advertising industry.
Yes. We did a shoot, an outdoor shoot for Safeguard.
Yeah.
Where Coach Rio was gonna run and race an airplane.
Yeah.
My tito's airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I think we need to double our egg offering because it's like not just the weather, but there's going to be airplanes. And the wing of the airplane fell off. Good thing my tito has more than one airplane. But anyways. Okay. So a couple of writers have written about Maria Cacao.
Yes.
Right? Ooh. A couple of historians have written. No one in our pantheon. Like just... guys in the newspaper.
What do you mean, our pantheon?
In our pantheon of like F. Landa Hokana, you know, of Maximo Ramos. These are modern returns. Yeah. So this is still like very folklore-y, very word of mouth still, right? So this guy who's writing, he heard first heard about Maria Cacao from his classmate in elementary school. And he told him that there was a mysterious rich woman who travels from the nearby hills of Mount Lantoy to the beautiful ship and can be spotted when you're on the town bridge. You can see it at dusk.
You can see
the ship. Oh, the lady and the ship. According to the classmate, her name was Pacifica.
Ah.
And she was an encanto.
Do you think it has to do with like sunrise and where
in the air
does it reflect the, somewhere
and it or makes it look golden it like a mist. Ship yeah I bet
probably right
I bet yeah. Like the mist coming down from a mountain yeah. And then hitting the shore
or maybe it's a very dewy part so there's like yeah. Fog or mist rising and then yeah. The sun hits it
and it's a very specific a golden galleon ship yeah and a beautiful woman on it
huh.
Yeah so what are the myths surrounding Maria Cacao apart from her being a trader of a ship?
Mm-hmm.
So since she's a traveler and she buys a lot of, she trades with a lot of countries, she brings back a lot of things also.
Okay.
Right? So it is said that if you are a person of that town or that area and you need something, you just have to go to the cave. And okay. You ask for it.
Okay.
The next day, it will appear in your house.
It's so Marie Makiling.
Exactly.
Because remember, like, the people who had parties and they asked for dresses from Marie Makiling.
Exactly. And go. Huh. Yeah. Say, so same thing. So
you're like, I really need a TV.
Yeah.
Like,
but also, it's specific to things from her travels.
Okay.
Since she goes to Europe and other places of Asia, people will say, oh, I would like some clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I need clothes. I need plates. I need utensils.
Mm-hmm.
And they would magically appear in the household when they get home or like found in the cave when they return.
A t-shirt with a Union Jack or
something. Yeah, 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 from Hong Kong. And then these objects were always made of gold. And the assumption is you always have to return the objects, okay. Right? After you ask for it. When you ask for it, you either would write and leave it at the cave or you would whisper. You would whisper at the entrance
return
of the cave.
Return what? Sorry, write what?
When you borrow that, these are just for borrowing. So unlike Maria Makiling where they ask for it, these are things you only borrow.
Rental lang.
Okay, okay. So you borrow it. It's like a library. So you borrow it, but you have to return it in good condition.
Okay.
Right? So what happened was over the years, the townsfolk started to forget about returning the things to the cave.
Okay.
And then they would return them without being washed. You know, ew. It's like when you give
that's so rude.
I know, like you give me a plate of brownies and it comes in a Pyrex. Uh-huh. And then when I return it, it wasn't even washed. Or it was like a cracked Pyrex. Yeah. Na. So people stopped returning it washed or when they would return it, it was damaged already. And because of that, Maria Cacao no longer answered their request. So you can ask as much
as like,
you want.
Guys, this is not a sustainable business model.
It's not a sustainable business. If we cannot agree to be civilized.
I think we need to discontinue this lending business.
No more lending for you.
Yeah.
No more lending. Yes. So, and then, so she just like stopped that.
But then it's such a random thing to attribute to her.
I know.
Where did this come from?
I don't know. Maybe there used to be a rich person who did like lend them things.
Probably.
And randomly lived near the cave.
Was there a Salvation Army there?
I know. Maybe there was like a charity.
Who knows?
Okay. Anyways, a lady. One later rendition of the legend asserts that someone borrowed from Maria Cacao and didn't return to them.
Okay.
And if this happened, if you did not return the plate or the spoon or the fork or the dress, she would take your soul instead. you didn't return my golden pitcher, so I will take your soul instead.
Honestly, okay. Maria Cacao the loan shark.
I know, right? Like, pang 5-6.
Grabe siya.
That's like, not even a 20% interest. So, they believe that she hunts for humans to keep as her slaves or to take them to the other dimension.
The fields or something.
Or to take to her other dimension, wherever that is.
Okay.
The other world as an encanto. And then there were contemporary accounts of Maria Cacao, right? So, and it seems to have merged with other mythological motifs of soul harvesting goods.
Okay.
But like, I think soul harvesting is like another level to like soul ferrying.
Because
Magayan, it was just like ferrying goods.
It was just like, you died. Okay, come.
Yeah. Whatever. Ito, soul harvesting. So this new story suggests that it's the souls that refuse to pay their loans to the goddess. And if they didn't
she
pay it,
a ruthless business lady.
Yeah,
honestly,
I kind of like it. I'm on board with that.
Yeah.
And they refuse to pay their loans, and they find themselves facing dire consequences when she brings her boat to take their souls to the other world.
Does she lend money or just objects?
Objects. Okay. It seems a very specific variant of this new element of the myth was reported in Cagayan de Oro after Typhoon Sendong. Oh. Washi.
Wait, when was that? That was...
When was Typhoon Sendong?
11.
2011. So during Typhoon Sendong, there were reported sightings of a boat with a woman at the helm traveling around the river offering to pick up passengers.
And bring them where?
And those rumors were accompanied by a warning to not accept invitations to board the boat because the woman was supposedly Maria Cacao, collecting souls for the next world. In his regular newspaper article, a column, anthropologist Michael Tan noted this soul harvester function wasn't part of the prototypical myth associated with the evolution of the myth, with a social need to invent stories as a means of coping with disaster and creating context for the sense of despair and to some degree offering a scapegoat for the situation.
Sad.
So people needed something to blame. However, in late 2022, a loud ship horn was heard for many nights by village residents near a very polluted river in Cebu City. The story attracted national attention due to several consecutive deaths following the mysterious occurrence. Some even attest that they saw Maria Cacao's ghostly ship impossibly sailing the narrow creek regarded it as an omen of death.
But how did people actually die?
Just mysterious deaths, like in their sleep or disease or things like that. And then other people said like it was a very polluted place.
Did people die beside the river?
Yeah, who lived by the river, the very polluted river. Yeah, but then they heard the ship horns and the ghostly ship horns. Oh, okay, so it can be traced back to other older narratives of golden ships that are deeply ingrained in the collective history of many Filipinos. The indication of the depiction of boats, the jars, the boat jars, could also have contributed to that golden ship metaphor of or
but do they have boat jars in...
They apparently do in parts of Cebu, in northern Cebu.
Like Manunggol jars, like?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. In Hiligaynon is where they don't.
Yeah.
In Iloilo. Uh-huh. But again, there's like an in-between, you know...
Well, you know, a psycho pump with a boat is very common in that area.
Exactly. In all over the world, right? A psycho pump all over the world. The mountain itself has always been regarded as a sacred abode of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
In this guy's research, he couldn't find any pre-colonial deity associated with Mount Tatoy that could be Maria Cacao's precursor specifically. But the original myths of the mountain may have been completely eradicated by the Spanish.
I mean, it's very likely it's one of the first settlements.
It was one of the first settlements, yeah. Even if it was the southern Cebu, it was within the first 50 years already occupied. When they first gained a foothold in Cebu, or nothing was there to begin with. Other studies have concluded that the legend actually could have come from a different town in southern Cebu that merges multiple different folklore into one. But so far, no in-depth analysis has been done further than that hypothesis. The soul harvesting boat, of course, was taken from the ancient Visayan belief that the departed souls were delivered to the land of the dead by boat. This is connected to the prehistoric boat coffin burial practices in several parts of the Philippines depicted in the Manunggol jar, a secondary burial jar excavated from a Neolithic site in Palawan that has two figures.
Okay, so it isn't necessarily that they use Manunggol jars in Cebu.
Yeah.
They just kind of connected the dots that, boats are a symbol of like transitioning to the afterlife.
Yes, yes. Okay. Usually, each soul is provided a small canoe accompanied by their spirit guide.
How considerate.
Their abay. In the case of Maguayen, the Ilonggos believe she ferries the dead along a spiritual river called Lalamban, like I mentioned before, and she has a big boat, the majestic Balangay.
So Maguayen is just like, heave-ho! Like, yes, we're going big, this direction.
Long boat.
But then everyone follows in their little canoes.
Yes.
Okay.
And then, so the large sailboat, it's Balangay. So that legend could have come from the Borneo longboats, you know, in Java and Borneo, they have the longboats also. Did it come from us or did it come through us to them and then eventually to like Moana and the peoples?
Who knows?
And then when the Spanish came, maybe the belief became a galleon instead of a longboat.
Yeah, because that's what they saw all the time.
Yeah. So the gold, the boat is gold, right?
Yeah.
And Maria Cacao herself has a lot of gold, trades in gold, mm-hmm. right? So the significance of gold.
Were there also gold mines there?
There were also gold mines there, but also it was a trade route for the gold trade. Uh-huh. But remember during our Maguayan episode, you said, what's the payment? Uh-huh. Is there a payment in the underworld?
Yeah. Do they pay her?
So here, yes, it's covered. So upon their arrival to Sulad, the purgatory, a soul would be either be accepted or rejected, whether or not it was decorated in sufficient gold jewelry. For this reason,
a lot of poor people not end up in Sulad?
I don't know. I like to believe that they did get into Sulad. Or maybe if they were struck by lightning or eaten by a crocodile.
Yeah. They took the shortcut.
They took the shortcut, right? And so this is where, you know, gold jewelry, gold death masks were used for the
highly valued.
There's also a belief that the brilliance of the gold represented the sun, and it had an absolute divine power to ward off evil.
Mm-hmm.
In other cultures, underworld deities, like in related cultures of the area, like Maguayan, have also been considered to be very wealthy because she was paid in gold coins.
Yeah, of course.
And is demanded when traveling to the realm of the dead, and a lot of people die aging. Perhaps it was the abundance of gold that decorated both the living and the dead in ancient Philippine society that is signified in Maria Cacao's golden spirit boat.
Mm.
So, you know, you can almost visualize like how it could come to pass. Like they see some weird boat-shaped thing in the distance. It's sparkling because of how the light hits it, or maybe it's like the sunset and it looks like a golden boat.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, that boat is sailing off somewhere, probably ferrying the dead because like 5 people died.
Mm.
And why is it that color? Oh, because of all the gold
mm-hmm.
that they collect
yeah.
from the dead. So that's like a weird logic
yeah.
that could make a connection to it.
But you know, gold is also just aspirational. So it could also just really be like, yeah, all the riches await you in the afterlife or something.
Yeah, an aspiration.
Mm.
There's another possible ship origin.
Mm-hmm.
So Maria Cacao's ghost ship and its many versions. It's not the only
golden I would love golden if Maria service. Cacao was like a pirate.
Yeah. She's a business lady.
Yeah.
I would love if she had like an eye patch, but gold.
An eye patch. Oh yeah, the gold masks.
Right?
Yeah. Cover the eyes.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not the only golden surface vessel in Philippine folk legends. Another older ship that again could have contributed to this was made of pure gold. It was called the Salimbal. And it also appeared in the Ulaging and Ulahingan epics. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
So these are new epics that we need to look into.
Mm-hmm.
Ulaging and Ulahingan epics in the indigenous Talandig Manobo people.
Okay.
The Manobo people of Bukidnon.
Okay.
So we gotta dig into the Manobos again.
Uh-huh.
The ship looks like a marine craft, but it is capable of flying through the air.
Oh, like the ship that goes to Biringan.
Yes! And it was used by the noble hero, Agyu, to transport his entire tribe to the heavens. The spirit world.
But remember, who's that guy? Lumabat?
Yeah.
Who also brought his followers
yeah.
to the heavens, but he didn't help
he
them.
He led them.
Yeah.
But he didn't help
like,
them.
I'm going on my journey. You can
chomp, chomp, chomp. I'm the only one left. Yeah. So those are the possible like contributors
uh-huh.
to the aspects of her
yes.
legend. There are, let's talk about the masculine aspects.
Yes.
Of like, he could have been a guy. So let's talk about the male aspects, right? Or the male depictions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, could there have been a guy who purported him? You know what it reminds me of? It kind of reminds me of how, have you ever watched Vikings?
No, but you tell me about it a lot.
Yes. So the guy in Vikings, the main guy in Vikings, his name is Ragnar Lothbrok.
Okay.
Who is largely believed to be a real person.
Okay.
But has aspect of his stories largely mythologized.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
as with many
rulers. And he said, and his main thing was that he was a descendant or an avatar of Thor
okay.
himself, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think about that in terms of, like, you know how Alexander said he was a god?
Mm-hmm.
And how, of course, Egyptian kings and pharaohs and whoever, they say they are also, like, Osiris and Isis and whatever, right?
I mean, to this day, the Japanese imperial royalty say they're descended from, I don't know, like,
the gods.
Izanagi, yeah. Yeah, those gods, yeah.
So I'm thinking these people who sort of took on this mythological aspect of Maria Cacao also did it in serving the purpose of
glorifying themselves,
making their efforts seem more noble, or more, you know, bigger than they were. So there are a couple of men, right? So there are a couple of interesting accounts about the elusive Maria Cacao from many different places other than Cebu. In some, she was known to host grand parties in her golden boat with other encantos. In others, she was a militant leader of an enchanted naval army who purposefully destroyed bridges made by the forced laborers of Filipinos. And there are even versions where she has a giant sea creature who is a shrimp as a pet.
A shrimp?
A giant shrimp.
I love this.
A giant shrimp.
This is my favorite version.
I like it. A golden shrimp. A golden shrimp.
Okay.
And then there are stories where she is a man with a different name.
Okay.
So one man she could have been was Don Diego. And the people of Tiwi Albay in Bicol also reported witnessing a golden ship sailing the Nagas River, which they believed was owned by a wealthy and mysterious Aryan-looking male figure that they called Don Diego.
Mm-hmm.
The narrative is completely similar to Maria Cacao's myths, which includes overflowing, flooding rivers, destroyed bridges, and his traveling business abroad. So, you know, could be just a different itinerary stop. There's another person called Lolo Amang.
Okay.
Lolo Amang, or Grandfather Amang, is believed to be an encanto.
Where's he from?
Romblon.
Okay.
Who owns a golden ghost ship that roams the treacherous waters of the Romblon Triangle, an area of the Cebuian Sea connected to three points in the northern Visayas, where many maritime disasters have occurred since World War II or beyond.
Mm.
According to many unverified sources.
Love this.
Survivors saw...
Blind item pa more.
Yes. The survivors saw the glowing ship of Lolo Amang before tragedy struck. They added the magical craft had beautiful, fair-skinned passengers on board, and music and laughter can be heard as they passed.
Mm.
Other reports also connected it to other well-known legends in the Visayas. They believed that those perished in the Triangle were taken by Lolo Amang in his boat to...
Bermuda.
Beringan! Pwede rin, Beringan! The invisible land of the Encantos allegedly located
so
somewhere.
So Lolo Amang was a rich merchant in Romblon.
Yeah. When they saw their ship, it could have been a portent of doom, but also could have been bringing people to Biringan.
Mm-hmm.
Could just be partying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could have been that. And then...
And they were singing, Mysterious Bottoms We Low. They were singing sea shanties.
Yeah. I love this whole series in TikTok where they take modern songs into sea shanties.
Yeah.
I love it. And then, of course, remember there's this guy who's supposed to be like her husband and or brother, who's her assistant.
Yes.
So who could that guy be?
Okay.
Maria Cacao's silent partner, Manggao, is likely originated from Mangangahaw.
Manganghaw.
Manganghaw. Or one who peeps in. And he is a psychopomp character.
Peeps in where?
Peeps in. Silip.
Peeps what?
I don't know. And he is a psychopomp character from the Suludnon mythology of Western Visayas.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Mangyan, he was one of the three brothers who was going to determine the person's manner of death.
Ah.
Do you remember that? From the Suludnon myth?
I don't remember.
I didn't remember three brothers. But anyways, maybe this is another epic that we need to go look at. to determine a person's manner of death beginning from the moment they were born. Sounds like the Fates, but it's boys. I don't like that it's boys.
Why?
Because I like the Fates to be ladies. Although Manggao is practically non-existent in the legend, he plays a useful role in how people viewed Maria Cacao. Single women during the Spanish colonial period were viewed as something to be needed to be controlled by a man.
So they inserted him to legitimize her.
In preparation for their true purpose in life as submissive wives and mothers. Therefore, Maria Cacao needed to have a husband or any other male
Who inserted mentor. Him in the stories?
I don't know, Spanish. I guess anyone who's a storyteller, right? Mm. I mean, like, imagine it, right? If I was a storyteller and then in this time, everyone expected to be everyone to be coupled up.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, this lady, she's a great trader. Mm. She'll lend you things if you ask nicely, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, wow, really? And she's successful, but who's her husband? Oh, no, she doesn't have a husband. No, impossible! Because I would believe every other aspect of this legend.
There's no way a woman could do all that.
That was the thing. That was the thing that was the tipping point for the suspension of disbelief, was that she was a single lady. And so they had to insert a male figure.
Yeah.
So that people would believe that a myth could possibly happen.
That heavily sucks.
It really does heavily suck.
But I love that, like, did he do? He was just there.
He doesn't exist. He just needed to be there.
I'm sorry, Mr. Storyteller. You can't even make up something that this guy does.
Yeah.
Like, why is he here?
Yeah.
This is the ultimate, like, this is the worst thing you can do in a story. Introduce a character.
The dress had no purpose. It's like just as ex machina, but like worse because he didn't even do anything. Anyway, so I had a couple of stories here about the tablea and chocolate trays in the village.
Okay. Wait, but, can we talk about Maria Cacao first?
Okay, go.
The entire time you were telling me about her, so my first reaction is, wow, this is a very, like, you remember our kind of analysis or our, one of the key discussions we had with the Encanto stories is, it felt very much, it was less of a, sorry, it was a combination of two things. One is the long time acceptance of the existence of a parallel world where there are spirits and entities that interact with us. It explains, like, unexplainable things.
Yes.
But eventually it also evolved into a reaction to foreigners living here and taking what's ours.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there are Encanto stories where they don't look foreign, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Encanto stories where they do look foreign, it kind of leads into
another place.
Yeah, and it could be interpreted as a reaction of the locals feeling like these foreigners are stealing their women and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So my reaction when you told me the Maria Cacao stories is, it feels like obviously this evolving need to tell stories to explain the situation that you're in. And if Cebu is one of the oldest Spanish colonies, in that they were one of the first areas that were touched by the Spanish, the story of Maria Cacao feels just like a huge reaction to the Spanish experience.
Yes, it does.
And even though, I mean, we regret that there's no history of, okay, who was the god really of the mountain, if there was a different god from Maria Cacao, and what did they mean to the people? This is very much it tells you their experience of the Spanish, where yes, there is this very powerful entity, but this entity is very aloof and doesn't really care about us, right? The bounties of this harvest does not go to the people.
And that you just like suck it up because it could be worse.
And like, there are like the disasters that happen are because of this god, and there's this undercurrent of like resentment that you hear in the stories.
There's always an unevenness to it, right? There's always an unevenness,
which is very different from a lot of the god stories we have, especially where they're deeply rooted in, you know, the local gods or the historical, the pre-colonial gods, because all those stories sound so much more benevolent.
Yeah.
Even if the gods are powerful enough to destroy our land, or they punish us because we did something wrong.
Yeah.
This character to me feels like even the punishment is so indifferent.
It's in disproportionate.
Aside from this loan system, which you know, we made fun of it, but whatever. Yeah. But the whole casualties and whatever. There's such an indifference. It's not like I'm punishing you because you're doing something wrong.
And all the other all the other gods that we've discussed before, not all of them, but many of them. Let's say Maria Makiling, for example. Maria Makiling didn't, even if she's very powerful, she didn't like lash out or she didn't retract or like separate herself from the town until something was really, really, really bad that was done. Mm. Until she was like super duper abused.
Mm.
And the only thing she did was just withdraw.
But that's the thing.
But
right?
Like here it's like.
No, but that's the thing here that. Sorry. Finish it.
But here it's disproportionate.
Yeah.
It's like a small slight of like not washing the dishes before you return them. I will harvest your soul.
But for me, even if that's the case, for me the bigger, not the bigger layer, but the layer that perplexes me or that really strikes me as different is the intent.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a punishment because like you did, you know, something especially wrong to your point, but I don't even care who you are. Oh, you're just gonna die.
Yeah.
Whereas even if the gods were wrathful and angry in the other stories, like, I know who you are as a person. There's a recognition of the personhood. Mm-hmm. And I punish you because you did wrong and you disrespected me.
Yeah.
Here is, I don't even care.
Yeah.
Like, it's a casualty, the bridge collapsed, whatever.
The bridge was there. It was in my way. Yeah. I had a business trip.
And that's the chilliest part to this whole thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it really tells you their experience, right? Because this is truly like, you know, labor workers were working, but we, like, what for?
Yeah.
You know, there's these rich landowners or whoever, and they're so powerful, but they have so much, like, power over us, but it they're so unreachable, and we don't even interact with them.
Yeah.
And other than this whole kind of loan system...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have these stories, but what does she oversee? What do people worship her for or whatever?
Is the bounty, anything? The chocolate bounty. Mm. That's essentially...
Do they offer to her? Or?
No, they harvest now. I mean, they...
So there's no... It's not like she's part of the mga pag-anitos and whatnot.
No. Okay. It seems as if the mythology that has formed around, the modern day mythology that has formed around the chocolate in that region in general was like, oh, because of her propagating the chocolate here, now we are able to have trade and elevate the status of Filipino chocolate because of her bounty and whatever, things like that. But that's more of like that's the reason why Maria Cacao all of a sudden became a spoken name again, was because when business people in the 40s, there was this company that wanted to revive the chocolate industry in the Philippines, in Cebu and in Davao. And they used the Maria Cacao narrative as sort of like, what do you call it? Provenance.
Okay.
That's the word I was looking for. So
do they do that for wine?
They do it for wine, They do it for wine. They say like, oh, this wine was owned, this winery is like 500 years old, blah, blah, blah. So the reason why Maria Cacao became visible again was because this couple had a company in the 1948, and they wanted a provenance for the heritage of cocoa in the Philippines. Mm. Apart from the fact that, by the way, it just came here maybe 500 years ago from Mexico, right? Yeah. So it wasn't even here, but like they wanted to make it special.
Anima, we should do a follow-up episode on...
Where we're eating chocolate.
No. That too.
Yes.
We don't need the episode for that.
Yeah,
no, on like, what's this? On the Mayan or an Aztec chocolate cards.
We should.
That's so... I was just reading about them because... Anyway,
it's very cool. Yeah. So that's a... It's a very... One thing that actually struck me was it's a very modern story. Modern meaning post-Spanish story. And I think a very commerce story. It's a commerce-related story. I thought it was going to be more death.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more commerce and the commerce of death. the economy and like the distance of death.
Yeah.
In this context, it's not a nice thing.
Yeah.
You know what? You were in the way of commerce.
Yeah.
And so I'm harvesting your soul for whatever.
Yeah. It's funny because when we started this podcast, I think our main objective was to kind of recover or get back the lost myths of like before the Spanish game.
Yes.
But I think especially now we've covered, especially in this death episode, we covered a lot, right? We covered the Kumakatok, is kind of like an American colonization period, or American era myth, and now this one. And I think the biggest thing in our journey is there is still so much that we can learn about the psyche of the Filipinos through the colonial period.
Yes. Right? I mean, it didn't stop. The formation of the Filipino identity stop. Yeah.
The myths are not... So when you think about Philippine mythology, I think our gut instinct is, obviously, you want to reclaim, you want to go back, you want to decolonize.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there is still something legitimate to be learned from, you know, the myths and stories that came up during the colonial period. And yes, a large part of it is, you know, the efforts of the Spanish to tamp down the old stories and histories, but you can still see what the old, you know, what the Philippine sentiment is and what the psyche is of the people who were being colonized in all these
and
stories.
A lot of the stories are like coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
Right? Like the story of
so it's
the
sad,
golden ship.
But it's really... Sorry.
Yeah. Not that, like the coping mechanism. It's like a it's in the Typhoon Sendong, which happened just 11 years ago, is that the people needed to explain like why is this storm so bad and why did it kill so many people? And I think it was too big of a reason for them to think of like, you know what, it's climate change.
Yeah.
It's deforestation.
Mm.
It's the abuse, it's mining. Yeah. It's all these different reasons. And it's easier for them to think, oh, because there was a big golden ship and Maria Cacao came and harvested the souls.
Even Pinatubo, right?
Yeah.
It's Maliari's revenge on Tinukuan and whatever. You know?
They want a bigger... They want a fatalistic reason, I guess.
No, it's not our fault.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's so out of our control. Yeah. What could we have done?
It was someone else's will.
In a way, it liberates you from, you know, having to be accountable. And it because the grief maybe is so unfathomable, it makes it more acceptable. Like, what could you have done?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Right? Like, I got nothing against a big golden boat.
Yeah.
Full of chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's a bit like of a bittersweet kind
it
of
is a
like
bittersweet,
realization.
But let
like
me,
chocolate.
Like chocolate. Let me bring you to, like, I wanted to close off with two things.
Okay.
About the unique aspects of Filipino chocolate.
Okay.
And also the story I was telling you yesterday, I was crying.
I was wondering, I was like, when is Anima going to make me cry? Anima messaged me yesterday being like,
I was crying.
Oh my God, I'm crying. I'm like, about Maria Cacao? What's going on?
Oh my God, I was crying. Okay. So first I'll tell you about the unique aspects of Filipino chocolate.
All right.
Even if the chocolate that is in the Philippines now came from Mexico, because of the adaptations that it has had and just
to the local climate.
To the local climate and everything, the Filipino chocolate does have a very unique flavor profile.
Which is
fruity and nutty.
Okay.
It's a fruitier, and they have a diversity of cacao strains that contributes to a broad range of flavors. And it's not just a product, but an integral in a lot of existing cultural rituals and celebrations.
Oh.
Yes. For example, and even in terms of combinations, food combinations, right?
Okay.
So like...
Like
what
food
do you,
pairings.
Yes, food pairing. So hot chocolate or sikwate will always be served with puto or rice cakes. And it is a staple for many Filipino
cuisines. So what is it about the chocolate that makes the pairing work?
It's because of the richness of the fat in the sikwate.
That
makes it a good pairing with the rice cake. And the rice cake will sop it up.
Mm.
It's also, so a lot of Filipino chocolatiers have created different flavors of chocolate, mixing it with local flavors. What's like
brand? Tio and Filo?
Yeah, Tio Filo. There is like coconut chocolate, durian mm-hmm. chocolate, and various other local spices. Mm-hmm. There's calamansi chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
There's like siling labuya chocolate. There's adobo chocolate.
Mm.
And many, many others.
Have you tasted those?
I have. I don't like the durian one.
Yeah, durian's a very acquired taste. Yeah.
The calamansi one is nice.
It's not acquired, the durian.
No, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. So I'll tell you a little about the TED talk that made me cry. But, you know, it's one of those things. Well, I'll link it in the
people
show notes.
People still watch TED talks.
Not as much as I used to.
Uh-huh.
Because you know what I realized? You know what I realized about TED talks? It oversimplifies things.
Yeah. It's all about that headline.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
at this point in time, it's always...
It kind of contributed to this whole, like...
BuzzFeed.
Let me give a counter, a pseudo-counter intuitive yeah. take on something, which is really just an intuitive take on something.
Yeah. And by the way, even...
For the sake of a headline.
Even the structure of a TED Talk
yeah.
is precisely for that design. Remember, because yeah. I did that TEDx in our old company. And so the structure is like a headline, counterintuitive evidence, counterintuitive yeah. evidence. Yeah. And you think yeah. you're leading up to something, a reversal of conclusion,
yeah.
and then the denouement. Yeah. Like that's the classic TED Talk story structure. I have one pager on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was watching this TED Talk. This TED Talk, by the way, did not follow the structure of a TED Talk
okay.
because it was just a story. And it's a story about a woman who is called the Queen of Chocolate
okay.
of Cebu. And her name's Raquel Shoa. And for me, I think the emotional part of it was really more of her narration
uh-huh.
than it was anything else. It's essentially how she talked about, she was very poor growing up in Cebu in the 80s. Her parents split up.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to live with her grandmother in the hills of Mount Lantoy.
Oh, wow.
And Mount Lantoy was, again, full of chocolate plantations. And her Lola worked mm-hmm. also in those plantations. Her family worked in that plantation. But they were very, very poor. And also there were a lot of rebels
mm-hmm.
in the mountains.
Yeah.
And so she would go to sleep, gunfire,
yeah.
screaming,
mm-hmm.
violence, and whatever. But whenever they had those unsettling nights, her Lola would tell her stories of Maria Cacao.
Aww.
And a lot of the legends, she's like, she realized later on that those stories were not of the canonical Maria Cacao.
Uh-huh.
They were just stories that she made Maria Cacao into a strong female character.
Aww.
Of like, she was a militant leader who fought for rebels. She was fighting for the freedom of the people.
Mm.
She was a generous, benevolent, you know, before the people of Mount Lantoy had nothing to eat. But Maria Cacao grew all these this chocolate and gave them the chocolate. But then the people abused her and then she went away. You know, so she co-opted a lot of stories, but they made them Maria. She made the Maria Cacao stories, right? And she loved that. Eventually, she went back to the city. Her parents got back together. She moved back to the city. And they were still dirt poor. She was a maid. She did not finish school. But she always remembered the stories of Maria Cacao. Eventually, she got married at 17.
Oh, my God.
And had like 8 kids. Like an impossible amount of kids. And by the time she's giving this TED Talk, she's like 40 years old.
Okay.
But, and then she wanted to make something of herself, right? When she had those, while she was having those kids, she said, I want to make something more of myself. And what is it? And she said, and then she remembered the stories of Maria Cacao. She said, I could be like Maria Cacao. And so she went back, she found the farmers, she found like small cocoa farmers. And then she started making a brand for the cacao of that region. And
what's
now
the brand?
They have different brands. They have the Chocolate Chamber in Shangri-La Mactan.
Okay.
And I realized I've been there.
Uh-huh.
So they have Chocolate Chamber. They have they have Ralph Gourmet. They have Casa de Cacao. And she was invited, like when APEC was there in the Philippines a few years ago, she was part of the agenda because she talked about how you take indigenous farmers, blah, blah, blah. But what she also did was she took the rebels, the rebels who were like, after they got arrested, they were freed, they had nowhere to go, they had no jobs. Mm. She took them in and she's like, I know you guys are off Mount Lantoy, and she gave them jobs.
Wow.
And they became her supervisors and things like
that. Because
at
the end of the day, it's not like the rebels are all like these extremist, militant, whatever people. These
sometimes are just, they just don't know anything else.
It's just an organization that gives them a stable job or whatever, right?
Exactly. A sense of belonging and a sense of being heard.
Yeah.
So she did that, and now she's like, she says, sometimes she gets interviewed and like, what's your mission and vision?
Mm.
Like that, she gets asked that, and she's like, I don't know what that is. And like, I didn't even, I didn't go to school, I didn't finish anything. And she says, but what's your dream? And she's like, my dream is to bring, like how Maria Cacao brought the chocolates or gold of the Philippines to other parts of the world. I want to bring that to the chocolates of the Philippines, and to find it's a unique thing, it's a special thing, and to the power of the story to bring it. And she's like, because like, who am I? I'm a mother. I'm 40 years old. I'm a mother. I have 8 kids, and I'm the queen of chocolates of Cebu City.
Oh, so that's like, so sweet.
But like, even her, like the way she talks, it's very slow, very meditative. There was music, and it was like mountainside sounds, and the images projected there on the screen are like of the farmers, of her children, of like what Mount Lantoy looks like, and of the chocolates and stuff. And so
for we should post the link to the TED Talk. We should.
And then there's also another thing I wanted to post, but I didn't want to show. There is a short film called Maria Cacao, and it is one of those slow Filipino art films. It's like 14 minutes, but I couldn't like not sit through it. And it was just like a conversation. It's the start of it is like someone bringing a body to a cave.
Mm-hmm.
And then the body is set on the water in the cave. And then the body slowly floats. And it's like 5 minutes.
You should have like just watched it. It just
floats away. Floats away. And then the next one is like a magtia talk about their uncle who's an alcoholic and stuff while like grinding chocolate, and then you see the slow chocolate just like flowing down, and they're talking about these abusive men and stuff like that, and it's like, God, these art films are killing me. But anyways, if you want to see an art film about Maria Cacao, it's it's there. So yes, that's my wibbly wobbly lefty righty account of like a Maria Cacao.
Wow.
The different one. She's a different one from the three Marias.
Tres Marias.
I know. And it's, again, Cebu, man. Cebu got royally effed early on.
Yeah.
I mean, but they're still there. They're surviving. They're, I think, I just think of all that was lost. All that was lost from that area. And If we can have something similar, and the new things that this story almost seems to have been like. Do you know, again, I was watching X-Files a lot. So there was an episode where they thought a woman was having multiple personalities, but it turns out it was multiple lives.
Mm-hmm.
But like the belief of like people who develop multiple personalities or dissociative identity disorder form these different identities to protect themselves, either because of trauma or because of just like a psychotic break. Yeah, exactly, like Moon Knight, right? And so sometimes I think this story and many other stories like it was a collective psychological imagining to rationalize.
Which are all stories. Like even the old pre-colonial myths are all that. Yeah. And I think that's what I was getting at earlier.
Yeah.
Let's stop going the hard extreme of
academic route.
Let's erase our colonial history and let's just like dismantle all of that and just like who we are is who we were before, because who we are is who we are now.
Yeah. All of it is part of us.
And I worry about delegitimizing.
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about, that was a Catholic, Spanish influence, blah, blah, blah. And yes, of course. And that makes it so much more interesting when you try to parse and analyze who we were before.
Yeah.
But imagine if we completely delegitimize this Maria Cacao story because it's not a pre-colonial story.
Yeah.
Right? Like, myth is a living, breathing thing.
Yeah.
right? Yeah. You can change Maria Cacao again. Like, who is she now to you? Who is she now to the people in that province? Maybe she has become benevolent because that's what they need now.
Like, right? Magwayan used to be like a sea lady, and then she became a death god because of her grief. And I think it's also an effort of people to not just to rationalize, to protect themselves, to give themselves a psychological construct to cope.
Yeah.
If but anything, it's a reflection of like the people's psyche of the time.
Correct. If anything, the danger is when you try to set things in stone too much.
Yeah.
When you take the Bible by its like literal word versus its spirit, like if you're a Catholic, right? Yeah. Like
the Bible by the way, which it itself was just a point in time of a story that was told 200, 300 years before it was actually
written. That's why you have like the Old Testament wrathful God and the New Testament benevolent God, because the times changed and needed to change, you know? So
Did you hear about the people who wrote the Bible like in like Gen Z speak? It hurts.
I'm like, good.
Like, don't.
I'm good. There are some things I don't need in my life. This is one of those things.
Okay.
We're jumpy and we're tired. God.
We had too much chocolate today.
We had too much chocolate. Thanks, Maria Cacao.
Thank you, Maria Cacao.
But we hope you enjoyed that.
Yay!
And we hope you enjoyed this, you know, kind of slightly different Maria apparition that we talked about. If you have opinions about honey or chocolate, let us know.
flat top or curly tops?
I love.
What do you like? I like curly top.
What do you think about Maria Cacao? What do you think about this, you know, slightly colder, bit more aloof version of the god?
Yeah.
Are there any Marias we've missed? Maria Cacao.
I'm sure there are
Maria
others.
Maria Sinukuan. Maria Makiling. Is Dakanlaon one is a
god
male version in the stories. God made
Kanlaon made the earth.
How about Apo? Oh, Apo is Apo.
Apo.
Yeah, that's true. We'll do our tour of the mountains. I'm sure at some point we'll feature the next mountain god or goddess. Mm-hmm. We hope you enjoyed this story. Hey Anima. Where can they find us?
They can find us at thegosmosgrazy.pod at Instagram, Facebook, Patreon, YouTube a little bit. And they can hear us and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Anchor.fm. You can leave us messages there too. If you like.
We love to hear from you. Yay. Like, what's your favorite Filipino chocolate?
Yay. And,
yeah, so as always, you know, if you could help support the podcast, that would be great. Leave us a rating, a 5-star rating or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That helps, you know, tell people that this is a podcast worth listening to. And the best way to support is to share with your friends. Yay. You know, do you have friends who are passionate about chocolate? Tell them that there is a god related to chocolate. And she's like this, you know, boss ass bitch business lady. Yeah, who's also sidelines as a loan shark sometimes. But you know, that's neither here nor there. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Do you eat champorado with tuyo? Like, you know, apparently it's a controversial. Shane finds the idea really scary.
Why? Maybe he just doesn't like dried fish.
Huh?
Does he just not like dried fish? Doesn't like fish? So that's, I think it's the dried fish. But if you say bacon, some people tried it with like longanisa, like crunchy longanisa.
No.
Right? It could hang. Oh, wait,
you know,
chorizo?
Bagnet.
Bagnet with champorado.
Right? Or guanciale.
Ooh, puede. Fancy. And then your chocolate has to be. It has to be like top-notch chocolate. Can't be just like regular tablilla. When I was a kid, so in the palenque, in the wet market, sorry, side story. In the wet market, when you get cocoa palm sugar, it comes in discs. And you melt it and you can turn it into a sauce for your suman and your other desserts. So it comes into discs. So me and my lolo, who's diabetic, we would eat the palm sugar chunks.
Oh, God.
We just eat it, right? It's amazing. Oh, amazing. And again, diabetes.
Jeez.
So when I got the tablea, I got it into my head.
No! That's
it was
so bitter.
The same thing. So I bit into the tablet and started chewing, and it's like charcoal.
It's so bitter.
So bad. It's so bitter. So, yeah, that was my tablet story.
Very fun.
We should have hot chocolate before you go.
I have tablet here.
You have? Can I have one?
Of course.
Okay. Yay! Yeah. And then I'll make hot chocolate at home.
Yeah. There you go.